Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, August the 6th. This is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Sandy T., the 12 Traditions, Tanya P. The readers of the text are Liz A., Becca R., and Chanel T. And today we are reading in the Big Book. We're on page 37 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, the second paragraph down. You may think this an extreme case, through one paragraph ending with how it could have happened. Comments on this one paragraph only. The share ID for Monday, August the 5th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,629. That's 21629. And for this morning's meeting, Tuesday, August the 6th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,631, 21631. Our newcomer greeter is Hillary B. An announcements person is Shelley E. Thank you all for your service. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who spirit, experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose: carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I will now ask Sandy T. to read the 12 steps of OA. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning. This is Sandy T. from California. Can I be heard?
Yes, you may. Yes, you are.
Yes, I may. Okay. Here are the steps as adapted for Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over the food and that our lives had become unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Sandy T. Thank you very much from Sandy T. from California. And I will now ask Tanya P. to read the 12 traditions of OA. Good morning, Tanya.
Thank you, Mo. Here are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supported, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service workers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to do service. This is Tanya, recovered in Michigan.
Thank you very much, Tanya P., for reading the 12 traditions. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone. And once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to remute your phone again. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 37, the second paragraph down. It begins with, you may think this an extreme case, and it ends with how it could have happened. And we will just be studying that one paragraph only, and I will now ask Liz A. to get us started. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Mo and Team Tuesday. Liz A. from Los Angeles, recovered compulsive overeater. You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. Yes, let's see. I didn't necessarily think it was an extreme case. I thought it was kind of odd to put alcohol in the milk, but that's neither here nor there. What I see is we have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences. And yes, I had gotten to the point where I knew that if I took my first compulsive bite, that I wouldn't be able to stop, that I would eventually, just have a huge binge. I knew that because it had been happening, and I knew how I got a craving. But here is the clincher. There was always, not sometimes, always, the curious mental phenomena that parallel with our sound reasoning that ran some insanely trivial excuse. And this reminds me that this disease centers in my mind. And the problem was, for me, I was an intelligent person. I had willpower to do other things. I couldn't believe that my mind would betray me. I tried everything. I had notes on the refrigerator. I had sticky notes all over the house. I had affirmations that I would do. I would not buy certain foods. But always, okay, in my mind, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin at times that I would rationalize and say, you know what, I'm going to binge tonight, but tomorrow or the day after, I will start all over, I'll get abstinent, and everything will be great. But that never happened. What kept happening instead was I kept relapsing, and the more I relapsed, the longer it took for me to get abstinent. First, it would take 1 day, then it would take 2 days, then it would take 2 weeks, then it would take months. So I finally understood about this mental phenomenon. And I knew there was only one solution, and that was what's stated in this big book. And I had to practice these principles in all my affairs. I had to do 10, 11, and 12. I had to sponsor. I had to be of service. I had to make phone calls. I had to read the big book to remember. I had to do everything every day, go to meetings, because if not, that mental phenomenon would come back. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much, Liz A. from California, for getting us started. And I'll remind you that's just getting on the phone. We are in the chapter, More About Alcoholism, on page 37, the second paragraph down. You may think this an extreme case, and it ends with how it could have happened. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day so that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Pearl R.
Sylvia F.
Laura. Pearl R. Sylvia.
Did you get Wendy B?
Yes. No, I didn't. Sylvia B. Wendy B.
Cheryl F.
Nirvana A.
So Cheryl S. And I heard Rosanna. Rosanna. A. Okay, I have
Nirvana
Pearl.
A.
Oh, Nirvana. Hi.
Hey.
Okay, we got a good group here. So I have Pearl. Sorry, Pearl, I didn't get your last initial. Sylvia F, Wendy B, Cheryl S, and Nirvana A. So everyone else, mute your phone except Pearl.
Hi, this is Pearl R. from Arizona. Personally, for me, denial was my excuse. I figured if I just pretended it didn't exist, then it didn't exist. And I did that for many years. I wouldn't look in a mirror. I wouldn't get on a scale. I would not even acknowledge, that I would just numb out and pretend like none of this existed. And that was a very slow and painful death that I was experiencing. And I finally had to come out of denial and face the truth and admit and say out loud, yes, I am an overeater. I am a compulsive overeater. Yes, I do have a disease. I do have an allergy of the body. And yes, I do own this. I do this. This is what I do. This is my life. This is me. And it's taken me many years to come to that awakening. It's been a slow progress, but it's been a good one. And I'm thankful today that I don't have to live in denial. I don't have to pretend that this doesn't exist. I can face the truth. I can face reality that I'm no different than an alcoholic. Just my addiction and my drug of choice is food. And I don't have to live. I do not have to continue living in this disease. I don't have to. There's a way out. And the way out is turning to God and seeking His guidance and surrendering and being willing to go to any length, whatever that may mean, whatever I need to do for today to stay sane and sober. That's what I have to do every single day, because if I don't, I am assured a quick but slow, painful death, but I won't be living to my a longer life. I'll be cutting my life short by many years. And I've had to learn a lot. This has been a huge school for me of learning. And I've had to relearn to do everything, relearn to eat, relearn to think, relearn to feel. I've had to learn everything over again like I was an infant starting at square one. But I'm grateful today that there is hope, there is a way out, there is the truth, and there is freedom. I don't have to stay in this cycle of insanity and in this cycle of misery, going around and around and around like one of those people that used to be at the mill that years ago they had to walk around in a circle over and over and over to grind the mill. Well, I don't have to do that anymore. I can do other things in life. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pearl R. from Arizona. Up next is Sylvia F., followed by Wendy B. Good morning, Sylvia.
Good morning. This is Sylvia F., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Portland, Oregon. And so nice to be on the line with all of you and to be reminded of my disease and to be with all of you who understand it too. As I told someone about my reaction to sugar yesterday, I was explaining it to like a normie, and I could see that this is my best friend could not understand. And I thought, that's why I go to meetings. So about this reading, what my experience, and I've been in program probably 18 years, not counting anymore. My experience is that I am pretty completely disconnected with my feelings. And so what happens to me is what was described in this paragraph is that we used to have a fellow who'd say, and here this thought would come in uninvited. And I would be like eating something with sugar in it or eating something that definitely I know, if I could remember, I would know that I'm going to have a bad reaction to it. What's so interesting to me about that bad reaction, so I know cognitively that when I eat sugar, it's not that it's going to make me eat more sugar, eat more food. Yes, it's going to do that. But I have such an abnormal reaction to it that I will be depressed, I will be angry, my brain will start an obsessive loop, and I will I'm just in a bad place if I eat it. Now, you would think, if I was a normal person, I would remember that and go, that does not agree with me. But no, I'm an addict. So that is also my medication, it doesn't work. It's an addiction. And so what happens to me is that in order to live in recovery, I have to work the steps. I have to do those, the step 10. I have to start figuring out what is going on in terms of my feelings, because I don't know what they are. All I know is this, it sounded like a good idea to have an ice cream sundae. That's, I didn't even know where the thought came from. What keeps me from it is following the directions, the textbook. And it sounds weird. If you're just new, it sounds weird. But honestly, I can't remember what this stuff does to me. So as soon as I've eaten that thing, even if I don't want it the next day, I've started the physical addiction and I have to have it the next day. So it's such a cycle. It's not where I want to live. And so what the joy of this, if, especially if you're new on the lines and new to recovery, is if I follow the exact steps prescribed textbook, just do it their way, don't argue about it. And if I put down the substance, yes, it's hard at first, and then it's not. It's neutral, because that isn't the problem. That was the solution. Thanks, and I'll wind up. It was the solution. If I do that, I can have neutrality, and I can actually have an unbelievably beautiful life of good relationships with families, friends, and myself. And with that, I pass.
And thank you very much, Sylvia F. from Far Oregon. Up next is Wendy B., followed by Cheryl S. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And the line where it says, we have sometimes reflected upon the consequences. And my mind has the ability to discard the truth that's right in front of me, you know, and to believe the lies instead. And my desire for ease and comfort and my desire for instant gratification of my senses and for quick fixes, you know, will take me down the path of separation from God. You know, the path of least resistance, of just, you know, floating passively through life will bring me misery, you know, where the culmination of you know, undealt with problems continues to increase, you know, until I finally surrender, you know, and realize my need for God. And, you know, I need God's spirit to help me discern the true from the false, you know, to help me with the ability to resist the lure of instant gratification and embrace the self-discipline to say no, you know, to my binge substances and to choose what's healthy for my body instead. And I need God's spirit to enable me to take the right actions, you know, when I'm facing difficulties, you know, to not be passive, but to embrace, you know, the hard work and, you know, and to make appropriate effort, you know, to accomplish goals. And, you know, in my weak, you know, addiction prone flesh, you know, I can't do any of those things by myself. I need God's spirit, you know, to give me the will and the desire to do his will, you know, to do his will, not mine. And, you know, when I pause and seek him, he gives me the ability to reflect on the consequences and to make better choices, you know, that bring life and health and happiness, you know, instead of misery and bondage. And I'm just so grateful for this program to show me this path. And thank you so much for letting me share.
And thank you very much, Wendy B. from Arizona. Up next is Cheryl S., followed by Nirvana A., and after Nirvana, I'll take another lineup. Good morning, Cheryl. Let us know where you're calling from.
Good morning, Mo. This is Cheryl S. in Nevada, recovered compulsive overeater. And, you know, it tells us in the doctor's opinion that this is a twofold disease. There's the physical allergy, and then there's the mental twist. And it tells us, too, that the only defense against the mental twist or the mental phenomenon is a spiritual awakening, a conscious contact with the God of our understanding. And in this paragraph, you know, it says, you may think this is an extreme case, but, you know, he's got this. If you've ever had the chicken pox or you've been in poison ivy and you are itching so bad and you know you should scratch that itch, you're going to get scars or whatever, and but you itch, you scratch, and you can scratch yourself until you bleed. And that's kind of like what this is. And some of my extreme cases are, you know, I thought, well, I could eat tortilla chips if I just eat them at a restaurant. And these are just my physical allergies and my compulsive behaviors. They don't have to be anybody else's. So maybe it's okay to just eat a handful of grapes because they're yes, I know that I can eat nuts, but what if I eat dry roasted instead of something else? So that does, it doesn't seem extreme to me. And it goes, on the page before, 35, page 35, he says he had made a beginning. So the beginning, he's abstinent. And at least for me, abstinence without recovery is hell. It is a place that I do not want to be. It is like chicken pox. It is like poison ivy. It requires such extreme self-will, and I am absolutely miserable. But that mental phenomenon, because I don't have that conscious contact with God, is just that constant itch. I've got to soothe it until I finally do have to soothe it. And that's what happened with Jim. You know, he wasn't spiritually fit. He had only made a beginning. And that brings me to the point that when you get to this point that you're willing to go to any lengths, not only go to any lengths, but do that stuff just as fast as you can. You can get through these steps in an amazingly quick amount of time and thoroughly if you make it a priority and your life depends on it. I know mine did. And when I haven't done it, I've taken that slow road back to hell. A few tortilla chips here, a couple of grapes there, some dry roasted nuts until
time.
And I'll pass. Thank you, Mel.
Well, thank you very much, Cheryl S. from Nevada. And before I take Nirvana, let me remind everybody where we're at. We're in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 37, the second paragraph. You may think this an extreme case, ending with how it could have happened. And after Nirvana, I will take some more names. Good morning, Nirvana.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you, everyone, for coordinating the meeting and being there every morning for all of us. So I'm Nirvana from California, compulsive overeater. And when it comes to eating, I realize I like things very simple. I can't think too much about food or how to prepare it. I just need everything to be very simple. And I'm very visual. So that movie, I don't know if people have seen it, Inside Out, it talks about emotions and who takes over. So now I've learned to pause and realize, okay, who's sitting at the control panel? Who's pushing the buttons? Because once my addiction presses the buttons, I know that exactly like what people have shared, I know the consequence, I know everything, but I'll still go ahead with the binge. And now I realize before the addiction presses the button where the whole cascade will start and you cannot stop it, before that starts, I have to think, okay, who's sitting at the panel? And if it's not God or my higher power sitting at the panel, I say, okay, I know who's there. Okay, will someone move this person and bring someone else or my higher power in? So then I can think clearly. So that seems to work for me when I keep asking myself, who's sitting there? Is it sadness sitting there? Is it fear sitting there? And I constantly have this, and then I ask for my higher power to come and guide everything. So that's a very simple analogy, but I just wanted to share because that seems to work for me, so I just wanted to share it. And with that, I pass. Everyone have a blessed day. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much, Nirvana A. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph? We're on page 37. And More About Alcoholism, the second paragraph down. You may think this an extreme case, and it ends with how it could have happened. Who would like to share?
Debbie in Israel.
Debbie.
Julie P., Minnesota.
Julie P., Minnesota.
Alicia R., Nevada.
Alicia R., Nevada.
Kat C., Ohio.
Kat, was that Kat?
Yes, Kat C. in Ohio.
Kat C. in Ohio. I might be able to take one
Lynn
more.
Lynn D., California.
Okay, we'll stop there. Lynn D. in California. All right, I have Debbie, Julie P., Alicia R., Kat C., and Lynn D. Everyone else mute, please, except for Debbie. Good morning, Deb.
Hi, Mo. Sorry, there was that little lag. Okay, hi, this is Debbie, recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. I wasn't fast enough to run over to my book. I was just listening and not looking in the book. You may think this is an extreme case. Okay, I've got it now. You know, I remember thinking, like, I'm going to kind of twist that sentence the other way. I remember thinking for so long that, like, my case wasn't extreme enough, you know, like, to be able to qualify for this program. I didn't have a dramatic enough story. I didn't have, like, a shocking enough story. It wasn't extreme enough. And I didn't get for a long time that it didn't matter. All I needed to be a part of this program was the desire to stop eating compulsively, which I had. And I think the fact that I didn't have any, like, big, extreme stories to tell and share made me miss for a long time the subtle stuff that really needed to be dealt with and that I ended up going to outside help with. But I think it just kind of kept me in denial for longer and made me feel like, oh, I managed so well as I was a high functioning addict. That's what I was looking for. So it was very easy for me to just go like, oh, I just have this little problem with food. Like, it's nothing. I didn't realize like how it touched every aspect of my life, touched every relationship, everything I did could be like, now I can connect all the dots and I can see where, you know, everything was, it was, my eating was a reflection of everything, really, that I couldn't deal with, which is all my emotions. And yeah, and the cases here, you know, do sound extreme to me, but again, I don't need to focus on that part to be able to identify in and to see myself in these stories and in these people who we're talking about. And the how it could have happened, you know, how many times I was just so baffled and could not figure out like how I could have binged again, how I could have gone back to that place, like how, after being so firm in my resolution to stop, how it could have happened again. And it was only through working the steps that I could really understand that. And also, like, I needed some more help to really, like, connect all the dots. But, yeah, I think I'm more, like, turning in circles now. So I'll end with that, and I will pass. And thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Debbie from Israel. Up next is Julie P., followed by Alicia R. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. My name is Julie P., a compulsive overeater in Minnesota. Thank you, everybody, for your service this morning. I was truly in dire need of a meeting, trying to get me out of me, and thank you, everybody, for sharing. I'm really connecting with this, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us, and I am so grateful that you all understand what this food addiction does. And because it seems like we're all the same, all of our sharing, we all have the same issue. And I'm so grateful that I'm not alone. the insane idea went out, I was just sitting here thinking about, you know, I didn't realize until I was in my late 50s that I was a food addict. I had been chasing it my entire life, and I'm thinking about some of the insane thinking, which I didn't realize was insane, but it's like, okay, I'm going to go hike 60 miles across an island in the middle of Isle Royal. I only have so much food to eat all day long, and that's what I get. And as I got closer to the end of my hike, all I could think about was getting to the restaurant at the end and all of those desserts that I was going to order. And my addiction truly took me from the beauty of what was going on all around me. And the longer I'm in this program, the more I realize how much control my addiction has had my entire life. And I'm so grateful that there is a solution and I'm not it. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Julie P. from Minnesota. Up next is Alicia R., followed by Kat C. Good morning, Alicia.
Good morning, Alicia R. from Nevada, compulsive overeater. And I love this paragraph for, you know, the trivial, what was it? Let me read it. I don't see it wrong. Some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. And it's amazing to me how even after time in recovery that can still come up, you know, and how quickly, you know, it doesn't look like the compulsive overeating that I did before I came into OA, which can be one of the insane trivial ideas that wins out, right? Like, well, it's not as bad, and it's just sugar-free, but for me, sugar-free makes me want the real thing. And, you know, and I immediately forget, or I don't care in the moment how it's going to affect me. And I think it was touched on already, you know, I'm unable to be present in the moment with my family. I have little to no patience or compassion for anything they're doing or going through. I'm not the person that I know my higher power intended me to be, right? And I have no power over that when I've decided to pick up, right? It happens so quickly sometimes, it's so subtle. But with recovery, you know, and I think the theme here is I know that's the answer. I've always known that's the answer. It's being able to choose that, right? And I'm seeing that seeking God is all of the tools, right? It's picking up the phone to call someone else. I've never looked at picking up the phone as seeking God, right? It's more like, oh my God, picking up the phone to call someone is really scary. That's all I can think of about that. Or, you know, writing, oh, I don't want to write right now, right? That's seeking God. And, like, I desperately do want to seek God. I desperately want more God, more God, more God in my life. And so when I start to look at all of our tools as seeking God, kind of helps shift that perspective, right? That where my disease gets in there and tries to convince me not to do those things. Because, again, I have a voice in my head that lies to me in my own voice. And tries to get me to do the opposite of recovery, right? And that is my disease. But when I frame everything as that's seeking God, and I do want to seek God, it makes it a little easier, a little softer. And I'll tell you what, every little contrary action I take, contrary to how I feel, contrary to what my disease is telling me, makes a huge difference. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alicia R. from Nevada. Up next is Kat C., followed by Lynn D. Good morning, Kat.
Good morning. My name is Kat C., compulsive overeater. Thank you for letting me share. I'm relatively new to OA and not new to 12-step recovery, but I am new to actually working all of the steps. So I guess what stuck out for me was our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. So it kind of took me back to, it's not even been that far. Right before I started OA, and I was kind of reaching out, and it's kind of been a pattern of sometimes reach out, sometimes not, because I really want to eat, right? And I don't want to be accountable. So going to a family, potluck, you all know what that's like. I brought food with me, which was new to me, but I still left room for looking at the buffet, thinking insanely that I'm just going to eat what is healthy on that buffet, and I'll just, you know, and I didn't have like a real plan of eating that I had mapped out and put on my app or whatever, or I didn't have a sponsor yet. And I was just trying to do the best that I could, I thought at the time. And it just has helped so much to just be trying to really follow those steps. And it's been life changing. And it's new, but I'm excited. I'm nervous at the same time. But with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Kat C. from Ohio. And before I take Lynn D., we will have time for maybe one or two more shares. We are on page 37 and more about alcoholism, the second paragraph down. You may think this an extreme case, and it ends with how it could have happened. And that was Kat C. from Ohio. After Lynn, we will have another lineup. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for everyone's service, for allowing us to all gather. I'm finding it extremely grateful that I can relate to people about compulsive overeating. I love hearing people's stories, no matter how insignificant they think they are or how, you know, the stories really, for me, make it this personal connection and things that I can stick in my mind. And, you know, if they went through it, then I can go through it. Or, oh, if somebody talked about how they handled this, like that, those are the stories that stick with me. I was just talking with a sponsee about the problem of like the screw it, or some people say the F word, you know, the F it's or whatever. And, you know, for me, that was when I didn't even have a higher power. I can't really do that anymore, like the screw it or start on Monday. I think the higher power connects me, from the reality to the non-reality. You know, I check in with it so much now. I got a really big push to check in not only in the morning, but in the afternoon, which I think I was missing for a long time. Because that is when, you know, after work or the sluggish or when you have to, you know, focus from you to maybe the family, that transitional time was hard for me. And I thought, you know what, why not? Why not connect with God at that time? I just think that nobody wins a medal for being beaten down the most. So everybody has any experience they can share that will help somebody. You just never know. For right now, I've been, transitions is like really weird for me right now. It kind of always has been, school's about to start, routine's about to change. I don't like the word, but like anxiety, like I'm not an anxiety ridden person, but there's like this nagging feeling of change coming. And I can do one of two things. I can embrace it, or I can totally just, you know, mess things up. So I've been checking in with God and two times a day now instead of one. And it's, you know, miraculous what happens when you connect with higher power as opposed to left to your own devices or even think about things on your own for 20 minutes. Like, that is very dangerous for me. The 20-minute drive home can be very dangerous if it was just me in my head. So, anyways, I hope everybody has a great day. Thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you very much, Lindy. And I have time for one more share. We're on page 37, more about alcoholism, the second paragraph down. You may think this an extreme case and how it could have happened, it ends with. Who would like to take that share?
Joanne P.
Pamela P.
What was that, P?
Joanne?
Yeah, you got it, Joanne. Take it away.
Thanks, Mo. Thanks for your service. I'm Joanne P. from Pennsylvania, and so thankful to be here. And oh, my word, just thankful for all of you and all your shares and all your experience. And this paragraph so much reminds me of my insane thinking. Wow. So the insane idea won out, right? This is what happened to me when I picked up. And yeah, by the grace of God, I'm not binging anymore. However, I'm still picking up. And when I do, I just am like, oh my God, what am I doing? You know, why am I tasting this? I'm not supposed to be eating sugar. I can't do this. You know, I've got to stop. And this whole mental phenomena, it's insane, right? This, I just love this paragraph, insanely trivial excuse. You know, like, I don't know what my mind can do to let me think that I can taste something. And I just feel like by the grace of God, I don't go into a complete, full-fledged binge anymore. However, I keep restarting my sobriety date because I keep picking up. So although I haven't binged for 2 years, I don't have 2 years of entire abstinence, but that's okay. I am so thankful for God and my connection to Him and for His grace and mercy, and yeah, for a program that has taught me who I am. Oh my word, I can't even believe I spent my whole life as an addict almost. I mean, not my whole life because I'm still living, but I spent most of my life thinking that I was in charge, I was in control, I could figure this out, I could try everything in the book. And yeah, and then I suddenly heard about OA and found out about this obsession of the mind and realized how well I could minimize and rationalize anything. And it was just part of my disease, my abnormal reaction to food. And only by the grace of God am I here today to tell this story. And I'm so thankful to all of you and especially to my sponsor who keeps me growing spiritually because yeah, it's all about our higher power doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. So with that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Joanne. Yeah, thank you very much, Joanne P. from Pennsylvania, and you will take us out today. Thank you, everyone who gave service and all those who shared. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Becca R. to read A Vision for You.
Thanks, Mo. This is Becca R., recovered compulsive overeater, calling in from Kentucky. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. The most right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God and stay in God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.